This is the In the Garage podcast by CarParts.com. I'm here with Mano Agulian, and we're talking European imports, the history of the modification market, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. SEMA, PRI, and let's just get into it. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, so I met you at SEMA. You had a 2002 BMW, super souped up. So I figured we could start with that discussion, kind of you know, what you did to the car, why you did it, and kind of how awesome it was.
Yeah, first of all, everybody mixes up 2002. Is that the year 2002?
I know, I was going to say that.
It's the brand. It's the actual
model, right?
Model of a car. Yeah, it's so they build them from 67 all the way to 76. Yeah. Small box cars, a pre-smog, obviously, if you buy them from 75 down. Living in California, you know, it's the best car to hot rod and do whatever you want to do with it. And the one that you saw at SEMA was exactly that. It was a big motor, turbo, on E85, capable to 600 horsepower. Obviously, suspension, everything is built. And, you know, that can accommodate that power. And the rest of it is just hang on for a raw ride. And we drove it to SEMA.
Oh, you did?
And, the car belongs to a dentist. His name is Chris. So it was built for him, and he wanted a hot rod. And he drives Teslas, and he wanted a raw hot rod. So I said, okay, we can do that for you. So that's the car you saw. And we stuck to that car. And over the years, we've built so many cars. Mm-hmm. I've been building cars in 81. And modifying cars became one of the funnest thing you could do. So I'm 15 years old, and my dad realizes I'm just this restless kid. He's a pastor, and his kid is just this restless kid that steals his brother's car and does donuts, right?
I have an uncle.
Yeah. So he picks me up and takes me to this body shop, and these were Syrian Armenians. I mean, I don't know if you know the – I mean, you would know Damascus Steel, right? Damascus is in Syria. So Syrians are known to work with metal. You give them a piece of sheet metal, they'll turn it into a fender. So, and I got dropped off at this place in Pasadena, California, that these guys had just come from Syria and had opened a body shop / mechanic shop. And my job was to clean and just to learn the trade. And one day, I mean, there was a newer car and it needed a door skin, right? And, you know, the door skin was not available. So this man, right, the Syrian Armenian man, takes a Buick, 1974 Buick door, takes the skin off, beats it to this, I think it was a Century or something like that, like, not a Century, one of those 80s car, 87 car, right? So he beats this skin to fit the door perfectly with the lines. And I'm like, that's what I want to do.
That's incredible.
That's what I don't want to change parts. There's no way I'm going to live my life doing oil change, which there's nothing wrong with that if you're taking care of a family, you know, but man.
It's not fun.
I want to modify cars. And my whole story began in 81.
That's fantastic.
Right? So, and I've been sticking to that. And that's one of the samples you saw at SEMA.
Well, that one was amazing. And, you know, what I liked about it was it was just so clean. And, you know, the design itself really fit together. Even how you kind of mixed the green car with the yellow kind of alpha badges. I was like, man, that still looks clean. And I hate that color combination.
Yeah. Lotus.
And I was still driving because I'm like, that thing looks amazing. So let's talk about how you drove it to Las Vegas. Because, I mean, that's not an easy drive. And a 600 horsepower car you would think would, I don't know, not be fun on the freeway. Was the drive okay?
The drive was amazing. And my biggest worry was bugs. And rock chips, and I have to drive it to the show the next day. So we said we'll drive it at night, so we don't get too many bugs and rock chips and stuff. It was one of the funnest things. Of course, Emmanuel drove it, and I just sat in the passenger and just enjoyed the ride. We put it on regular fuel, you know, 91 octane, so we don't have the 600 horsepower and E85. Tuned it down. Sean from Church Automotive Tuning. I mean, these guys are. I think he's the world's best tuner, and I've tried all kinds of tuners. So Sean tunes it down, says, Sean, I want to drive this to SEMA, and I want to drive it back, and I want to do good gas mileage. Mm. I want to be able to drive the whole ride on one tank.
Wow.
Fuel, and that's like 13 gallons, almost 14-gallon tank, and we did it.
Wow.
We almost didn't make it, but we did it on one tank. We made it to SEMA. Great ride. A lot of thumbs up, even though at night people slow down, take pictures once in a while. You know, we go at it, and we got a Hellcat come next to us, and the guy kept saying, cute car, cute car. Yeah. You can hear it. So downshift, they showed him what cute car is all about, like what you could do with these. But he was like, ah! Right? So it was a good ride. It was, you know, building cars, and I know SEMA has changed. Mm-hmm. But for me still, if you're a car builder, don't build them just to be cute.
Yes.
You know, build them that customers can drive them, race them, and cruise them.
Yeah.
Because we have the technology to do that today, right? We didn't have back then. We didn't have it. And that's what I wanted to do. Is just, we'll just drive it to SEMA. I don't want to trailer it and pull it in, enjoy the week, and then drive it back. And that's exactly what we did. It was fun. It was good. Smooth. Spring baits are not that heavy. They're not like high spring baits. You know, I'm not running 600 pounds in the front, you know, just like at 400 pounds in the front. And then in the rear, it's an inboard spring, about 500. Smooth, good shocks. Not a problem. Yeah.
Man, that's incredible. Well, I love that perspective too of, you know, you build this car to drive it and to break it. And there are some people online you see where it's just like, you know, they'll drive a $200,000 car. It's like, this is my daily driver. Yep. And it's a little beat up.
Yep.
And you're like, ah, well, good for you. Because there's nothing worse than somebody who has like a really fast, fun car and then never drives it or, you know, doesn't drive it fun. So no, that's a great perspective.
And purpose built too, Mark. I mean, if you build it for a purpose, it's easy. This is a drag car. This is a road car, but to do a car that's drag, road, show, grocery getter, right?
That's everything.
That becomes like a stereo working, need AC, a big power. That becomes a bit more time consuming, but it's well worth it. At the end of the day, I think it's well worth it. Someone can decide to do drag racing with it, and he wants to go canyon, whatever he wants to do. The car is ready for it.
That's awesome. So what does that take, though? Because I know building the car is one thing, but building it to be versatile and durable, how do you go about achieving that aspect?
So over the years of mistakes. look, I built a lot of cars. I'm mainly European. I got into the hot rod business for a while, you know, building hot rods. A bit boring. They make everything for those cars. American muscle cars, man. I mean, you could do it and you could build a car in your bathroom in your tub.
Yeah, you see the shows.
And it's like 6 second cars. They make everything for it. For me, remember, the challenge of non-CAD inventing and building, right? CAD today is just like scan, build, put in a machine, CNC it. I still don't see any fun in that. I think the tradesmanship that I learned from this Syrian-Armenian guys, the stuff they did with these cars, I mean, you didn't have a carburetor? No problem. Give me any carburetor. I'll make it work, you know? That was just exciting. And the rest of the world's like that. Like if you go to Cuba, how they preserve those cars, right? They put crazy diesel motors in them and stuff like that. So the ingenuity and the craftsmanship, I think it's what I was interested in and I was in love with. And I realized that I'm one of the dying breed that can build and do these things. So I built a lot of cars. I've learned a lot from the Italian cars. They look just pretty, too heavy, you know, way ahead of its time when it comes to ingenuity. Twin cam 5-speed in the 60s, really? Oh, wow. That's what Fiat did. That's what Alfa did. That's crazy. Till I got to this BMW, the older BMWs, right? And I realized they're built like a tank.
Yes.
I mean, the chassis and how they're stitched together. And all I have to do is just gusset certain area, keep the flex a little bit, you know, and stuff it with a big motor. And it gradually started getting bigger and more powerful and realized that, oh, this thing's not stopping. Realized that when you stop, the back end comes up. So change, you know, control arm angles and stuff like that. So over the years, I think I've come to a good combination.
Mm-hmm. Like a
good, like good combination up to any power you want realistically, but 380 horsepower in a 2,000 pound car, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun and daily drivers. So, And that's what it was. So, oops, like cracks here. Oh, man, this thing's just ripping the, you know, the C-pillar, you know, lower part of it. So it's just a lot of trial and error, I think, and until you get it right, until you're like, okay, this works.
That's awesome. So when you're doing one of those builds, do you actually say, okay, we're going to build up the engine and then test it to see where maybe the weaknesses around the car are, or do you plan out the whole thing?
I plan out the whole thing based on the person that's going to own the car. Okay. And look at their that kind of you know, who they are and what it is that they want, right? So, and every customer is different. Mm. And what's good about this industry that we're in, you know, now car parts are available everywhere, right? And so you could literally, just like building a suit on someone, you could stitch a car to fit them perfectly, right? And I have so many crazy stories. Like I have this this crazy business guy walks in, and his name is Vache, right? Mm. I'm like, okay, Vache, right? And he wants, and his favorite driver is Hans Stuck, and he wants a 2002 that's an Alpina, that, and he's just talking to me, and I'm looking at this guy, like he's perfectly shaped, dressed, his watch matches his shoes, and I'm like, how am I going to build a guy? This guy's a perfectionist. This guy's a perfectionist, and I'm about to build him a car that's over 50 years old. It's like, how is that going to work, right? So after talking to them, I don't start building right away. With him, for example, it took 2 months. It's like, hey, let's go grab coffee. I want to learn more about what you want to do with the car. I don't want to build it backwards. Okay. Build a car to what I think I like. And there's a lot of people that I've told them that I can't build you a car. I just can't do it. What you want me to do, I just can't do, you know? So, but
you took it off.
Yeah. Stitch it to the need of the person. And remember, metal, motor, you could do anything you want to do to it. And just dream it and you could build it, right? So that's the concept that I have.
Download the CarParts.com app and accelerate convenience with access to over 850,000 auto parts at your fingertips. We make it easier to find the parts you need anytime, anywhere. Get it now on the Apple App Store and Google Play.
So in terms of those builds, what would you say is like the craziest thing that somebody has asked for that other garages said, no, I can't do that or I won't do that?
Too much power.
Too much power. Yeah. I want 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, it's too much power, and I get a lot of cars that come from shops that sat there for 8 years or 10 years, is executing the project and finishing it. And I think I get a lot of that stuff, but I think it's getting crazier and crazier, right? I have a guy that has a TII. TII is BMW 2002's, like, collectible, right? Okay. You have the turbo. You know, turbo 2002s, and then you have the TIIs. And this guy has a TII, and he's like, comes to me, he says, Mano, I know you could do it. I want to put an S54. S54 is an E46 2000 and up M3 motor, ITB 340 horsepower. You know, you can go sequential. It's like, I want to do that in the 2002, but I want stock body, and I want my wheels to be max you can fit in there, 7-inch. You see, so I'm starting to get a lot of, you know, if you can dream it, you could build it type of thing. And out there, and you have to remember, like, the gaming world, when I grew up, there was no gaming world. You want to play a video game, you stole your dad's car or your uncle's car. You went on the streets and you beat the heck out of it. And that was the gaming world, right? But in today's gaming world, I get a lot of people that, man, they know their parts. Oh. They've built their cars, but it's all on, you know.
Yeah, it's all virtual. It's all,
video games, right? It's not reality, but they know what they want. And
well, and they know how it'll drive a lot of the times, too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those engines are super accurate. I started playing the F1 game on PS4, and I'm like, I start using the techniques while I'm driving my car.
Yep. You see that? And it's all good. It's all good. So I'm starting to get a lot of those guys that really know what they want. Mm-hmm. Is it impossible to do? No. And I tell them, it's like, listen, time and money.
Yes.
Whatever. You want me to do, put a F1 motor in back of a 2002? Great. Get me all the, motor. You know, the rest of it is easy to do. So sky's the limit. You could do. And the craziest things, I think, are now coming up with the new motors, modern BMWs that people want to put them in the car. How feasible is that? It's completely up to the person's dream. Yeah. Practical? Yeah. I mean, there's a formula that you could build with the practical parts, inexpensive, but still solid, good, fast car. And later, if you decide to sell it, it still fits most of the people's kind of budget, and this is what I want and drive. But the looks are the looks, and I think everybody loves that square box, 2002, Datsun 510, right? All that era, you know.
Yeah, so it's classic. Well, I think it kind of evolved away from that, probably the 90s, when everything got kind of ugly and round, I would say.
And then 2000s and just a bunch of lines running here, there.
Well, then they started going like, okay, we're going to go vintage, and they came out with the vintage-style Camaro and the vintage-style Mustang, and now you have the Bronco, and you have all these different cars going back. I don't think back enough, because I do like the straight lines. And, you know, the more I look at it, the more I'm like, yeah, we had it right in the early 80s.
Isn't that insane, though, Mark? I mean, they're still looking at the 70s and the 60s and copying how perfect those cars were and say, let's make the modern version of that.
Well, you know what? I think that reflects what you're talking about, where you actually go in and you pound the metal and you do the work with your hands and creativity. And it, maybe it's not perfect, but you're using a lot of those, you know, essential skills in order to get it done, versus, hey, I designed something on CAD, I printed out on a 3D printer or, you know, a CNC machine, and that's doing all the work for me, and I don't have to get my hands dirty or even understand how that stuff works and why it works. So I think that's probably why the design side got away, because nobody's learning the essentials like you did. So if somebody wanted to do that, kind of like how you learned, do you think that's even possible today? Or is it?
I think so. I mean, I've had a lot of young people that just have lost their way and don't know what to do with their life, but they love cars, and they come apprentice position, and man, some of them have amazing shops now, and they have amazing jobs now, you know, and learning how to actually, you know, bend metal, weld, and change geometry, angles, and suspension. It's exciting. It's very exciting for specifically people that just can't sit on their butt and study, right? And this is what and there's a world out there for them. Now, the industry's dying. You know, I have to tell you, like, body shops are parts changers now.
Yeah.
You know, back then, body shops, you give them a mangled car, you'll get your car back, right? So it's hard for me to find body shops, right? So I have two body shops, two that, I mean, if they tell me I want Louis 13 for Christmas as a present, I'll get two of them and just be my buddy, you know, because or else it's a cemetery. You take your car to a body shop and they don't want to work on a car that paint jobs on, you know, they can paint the whole car, do body work for what, $10,000, $15,000? They can change one fender and make that money. So this lazy way of making money in this car industry, unfortunately, it's happening. Machine shops, you know. Like, I have this one machine shop, and it's Steve's machine shop in Azusa, right? And Russ is a third generation of engine builder, and his brother. Cool. You know, and they do it for the passion of it. And they have selective customers. So you just want to get in there and say, all right, this is my year. Build me these 510 motors. I don't care if I ever use them, but just build it. Just so you don't die away, you know. So you need, and that's where we are right now in this industry, unfortunately. Like, building things by hand it's not CAD. It's not perfect. But man, you sure can make it perfect and enjoy it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And seeing a finished product that you actually built, I think there's a little bit of godness in us.
Oh, like, yeah,
I created this.
Right? You didn't cheat.
Yeah. So.
No, well, I think, thanks to people like you, I think it's staying alive because, you know, you understand the value of it. And honestly, all kind of human-made products themselves, I think are just better because you like that variation. You like the story behind it. And I think now everybody's getting more interested in that because we're kind of getting bored with whatever, you know, a machine can create or what we're supposed to do to a car or whatever. So I think it's not quite dead. And I actually think the younger generation, the Gen Zers, you know, are more interested in this kind of like hand-built stuff, like your son, right?
My son. And I mean, there are like one of my customer that became a good friend bought one of my cars. His name is Andrew, right? Andrew Zamora. tatted out, the coolest guy you've ever met, he will never drive a new car. He'll say, Mono, just build me another, you know, 2002 BMW or an E30 BMW, and I'm happy with that. But like, Andrew, like, we could put you in a brand new, as soon as you say brand new M3, M4, look at you. And it's like, not for me. Thank you very much. Build me another one. So, and there is that generation. Mm-hmm. You see that generation. And what's sad is, you know, Mark, like, when I grew up, if you weren't good in school, you became a tradesman. Today, we brand these kids as a spectrum.
Yes.
They're in the spectrum. They're special needs. As I understand, there is such thing as special needs, you know. But a lot of these people, the young people that just can't, they just can't look at a book. And their way of learning is different.
Yeah.
Are one of the craziest car builders, engineers, designers without the degree. They have it in them. It's like sort of like genetically God put that in them.
Yeah, you know, well, I think they're almost like almost hyperactive in terms of their intelligence. Yeah. A lot of them are super smart. If you talk to them, they're just not good at the structure.
Yep.
You know, like sit there, shut up, and you know, do your homework, and that's it. So I think that's starting to come back too, where a lot of people are going to have to go back to the trades, which is good because that's why everything's gotten so expensive. Is that we don't have the tradesmen like the mechanics and the metal workers and people who actually know how to build things from scratch. Yep. Because we all just order it on Amazon, right?
Yeah, at that. And I mean, even an alignment shop, you can go to an alignment shop, they'll press a button based on the year of your car. That's all they know is what the machine says. But you know, the stuff you could do with your alignment, you could turn your car into a go-kart if you know how to align the car based on its weight, you know. So you see, so we lost that trade, right? So it's important. I think it's very important to get the other. Get the younger generation to come up and say, look, you can go to do school, but if you're not good in school, right? I have a young guy that has worked with, what's that car company, 3D printed the whole car.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he worked there, and this kid was someone that didn't do good in high school and got in trouble, and he gets arrested. He comes out of jail, and it's like, I need to do something with my life, right? His name is Ed. So, and he, first thing you think, I'm going to go to church. So he goes to church, and then somehow he was pointed to me. And I said, hey, Ed, like, what do you want to do? He goes, I don't know, man. I need to do something. I'm literally like homeless, you know? I'm like, okay, let me take you to a friend of mine's shop, and I'm going to teach you welding. I think if you learn how to weld, you can be a fence maker. So, yeah, so many jobs, right, Mark? So, took him to the shop. It's 5 o'clock. Jeff Ireland, Ireland Engineering. He said, Jeff, I'm going to use your shop. I'm going to teach him how to weld. Jeff's like, all right, you got the keys. Close up down the shop. So I showed him what he needs to do. And I said, I'm going to leave you the shop keys. Close up. I'll pick you up in the morning. He was like, this guy's trusting me with a shop? Yeah. I'm a criminal, kind of. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And he's not.
No.
You know. So I come in the morning. He's still welding. The shop's clean. 2 days later, he could weld better than I can. I mean, this guy can TIG better than I can. I mean, today he owns Mobile Weld Specialties, right? And he, I mean, people beg him just to come and fabricate and build cars. Because after you learn how to weld, you're going to learn how to fabricate. Mm-hmm. After you learn how to fabricate, you can start going deeper and deeper into cars. So
that's amazing. Well, and it's not like some super complex skill, because I think a lot of, you know, I have Teslas, and so I'm like, I'm not going to touch this thing.
Yep.
I don't want to get electrocuted, and I don't want to break anything or mess with the programming or do all that kind of stuff. So you're kind of stuck in a spot. But with the older cars especially, you could do anything you want with them, and they're still useful, which is super, you know, a big advantage if you want to keep on tinkering. Now, in that regard, I know with a lot of the modifications, like, do you keep the air conditioning? Because that's always my concern with I'm in Texas, so.
Heater, heater, yes. Heater is very important, wherever you live. Air conditioning is a plus. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys want lightweight, fast canyon carvers.
Okay.
And that's what they want, lightweight, fast canyon carvers, right? And you tell them, look, if I'm going to start doing air conditioning and all this other stuff,
power window,
electric steering, you know, and here's a great, let's talk about SEMA, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody makes cars for older imports. There's a couple of people that do. Nobody's interested to make, you know, cars for imports. But the American hot rod, it's huge, right? So they come up with an electric steering, and you go and say, do you have a mini size of that? Oh, yeah, we do. It's made for this car so it could fit in dash. I'm like, oh, yeah, that fits in a BMW 2002. Perfect. So they've started to give us, without knowing, an incredible amount of parts. You know, they call it Chevy Vega. I call it BMW. It doesn't matter. Right? Like, so, and a lot of that stuff, SEMA has become pretty much a place for us to go and see what the American hot rod world is doing, learn from them and say, okay, control arms, you know, the geometry, physics of a car, it's all the same, right? So, and we're starting to grab the parts and do what we want to do in the European, you know, market, vintage market that we have. So very cool, very interesting.
That's all. Yeah, kind of melding the new with the old and getting that comfort factor as long as it doesn't add too much weight.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Is your engine living its best life? If you have a luxury sports or performance vehicle, the answer may be no. You need a premium oil engineered specifically for high output engines. That's where Liqui Moly comes in. Made in Germany with an innovative additive technology, Liqui Moly's synthetic motor oil provides outstanding wear resistance, temperature stability, and cleanliness. Give your high-end engine the high-end oil it deserves. Go to carparts.com/Liqui Moly to learn more and find the right oil for you.
Well, let's talk about SEMA, because I know you mentioned that it was different this year, and then it was different 2 years ago, and then before that it was also different. So let's talk about kind of the history for the last, I don't know, 10 years of something, or of the show.
All right. So I was doing stuff for Ford and Volvo. So at one point, it was the factories that had taken over. They were bringing their hot rod cars. They were doing all that stuff. From there, it went to the individuals. I mean, it's always been back and forth, and this is not the whole history of SEMA, of course. Ed Iskandarian was one of the people, Iski Cams, right? He's one of the people that started this SEMA idea, right? So, you know, and then it became to, if you can build a car and your car can make it to SEMA, you're the man. You're the man, because you can have people going, what is this? This is just horrible. Or, man, that's a great idea. So it became the grounds where I wish I could put a microphone right where the cars that I've built over the years,
that's a good idea.
And hear the comments, right? Hear the comments, the curse words, and the, right? Like, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. So all that other stuff. And of course, you have a lot of people with opinions, but you know who knows what they're talking about. Yeah. So it went to that. And a couple of years ago, I did a 2 years ago, I think I did a twin turbo E30. A big flare body for Strong Hand Tools, nice. Right? So I built a car for their boot. And it was the year of influencers. And these influencers were people that, I don't know if they've ever taken a bolt off and put back, but they had crazy followings. So SEMA was filled with this, oh, influencer, young people run there, and a bunch of women half naked. It turned into that girls and cars and show, and it was that era. So we went through that era, and I think now SEMA's turned into really, you want to see a $2 million Dodge Charger? Come to SEMA, you'll see a finished product where it cost $700,000 worth of hours just to get this body perfectly straight. Some of the things you see at SEMA, and of course these guys are either build one-offs and two-offs, and it takes a long time, 5-6 years to build one of those cars. But the perfection of old cars is incredible at SEMA. A year or two ago, of course, everybody wanted to do Stinger idea. I'll take an old car, I'll make it modern, and I'll sell it to people. So there's a lot of business, still business ideas coming in. And I always get people to say, hey, why don't you take these BMW 2002s and make them to Stinger? Well, Stinger. I love Stinger, what he's done with the car. On me, let me just get creative the way I want to get creative. And I might not make a dollar out of this and die the way Picasso died. Poor, right? But maybe my work later on will people will appreciate that. So there's that end of it. So, and this year was the year of these old American hot rods that are beyond perfect.
That's amazing.
And you see a lot of that stuff. And I saw a lot of stuff. And I saw a lot of people had kind of died off, right?
Oh, really?
And like you walk into the Toyo place, and it's like, no, these cars should not be here. SEMA is a different level. SEMA is like, it's got to be one-off, unique. And it's been kind of hijacked by a few photographers and few people that, if you know me, I can show your car everywhere. But if you build a crazy car and you're in this booth, nobody cares, not unless you beg them to come and see these cars. So it's kind of turned into this weird thing.
Competition.
That it takes shape. And the competition has become where it's who you know that will get you out there. It's not what you've done. You see, SEMA is about what you've done, you know, and then it's who you know. Now, all of a sudden, you got this attitude. And I mean, you guys were in SEMA and we met. It's turned into this, like, kind of this attitude, like,
I mean, does this qualify for being looked at?
This is a World Trade Show. I mean, this is SEMA, right? Here, right, you know, so.
So with those cars that actually get into SEMA, like the ones that they had in the parking lot, do they have to qualify, or what's the process for actually showing?
You know, some of them, it's who you know and who you're buying products. If you're a stereo shop and you're buying a lot of JBLs from JBL, you know, and you just build this crazy truck, JBL says, go park your truck there.
Nice.
A lot of time, a lot of hour into it, you know, regardless. But then you see cars that are, he must have known somebody that, hey, can you get my car to SEMA so I can have bragging rights? That, I took my car to SEMA. So you see a lot of that stuff. And SEMA, but you got to pay attention at SEMA. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of Australian and Canadian companies, small booth, crazy technology that they've brought their European craziness into this industry. And you pay attention, you can find a lot of new products, right? So I found this product that you can literally bolt to your fenders, center tire, all four corners, Bluetooth, little valve into the tire stem, right? Australian company. It reads temperature of the tire, pressure of the tire, and the movement of the wheel. It's all Bluetooth in your phone. You're collecting data.
Oh, that's incredible.
For $600.
Wow.
All that for $600. So you have to pay attention at SEMA. There are some, again, because of these few people that are just like, follow me and I'll make you somebody important. Mm-hmm. We're losing the little guys, some sharp engineers that are out there. And I saw a lot of Canadian, a lot of Australian, a lot of other places too, with some incredible technology that they bring to SEMA. And if you pay attention, you can.
Oh, super cool. Yeah, I would love to, you know, be at that level where I could identify those, because a lot of times I'm like, wow, this is really just overwhelming.
Yep.
Everybody has cool stuff. Everybody has these crazy builds in their booth. And I'm like one car, I forget what it was. It's actually a company here in California, but they do airbag systems. Mm-hmm. And they had I think it was a Tesla Y that they fit the entire thing in the frunk, which was the front of the car. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that. I don't know how you did that, but it was all custom.
Yep.
And then what they did was they made the custom parts, and then they have the kind of reseller parts where, you know, anybody could buy them, they're bolt on, which I actually really like that model where you're doing the customization, but you still have something that's slightly more affordable for people.
Yep.
Because everybody wants a cool car, but there's not enough of you guys out there to even get the custom stuff all the time. So if you do have to go with, say, those aftermarket parts or something that's not custom built, what do you think is the best way to, you know, build a car that way? Or is it even possible?
It's possible. I mean, see what you want. And this industry, this parts industry, has really made it so simple that you could do things in your garage.
Hmm.
Airbag kits. I mean, and again, thank God for the hot rod world, right? A lot of guys like, you know what? I'm going to take these airbags and machine a couple of pieces and make them for VWs, you know, GTIs on airbags, and I'll send you the whole thing. And we're going to focus on VWs. Mm. But the bags are bags, and you're buying bags from a couple of companies that make bags, and you're just adapting, you know, the solenoids and all that stuff. Everything's the same. So you're adapting and making things simple for the guy that wants a slammed car, but then he wants to lift it to drive it.
Yeah.
He could do it at home. It's very simple because you have a lot of specialty people now. VW, you go to these couple of guys that only work on VWs, and BMWs, you go to these couple of guys, you know, that do, you know, BMWs. And so, and all these guys are coming to SEMA or talking to these manufacturers that build airbags and saying, can you give me a bag this size? Yes. Okay, good. Hey, CNC machinist, here's a drawing. Make me these cups so I can, and there's a lot of people that are making good money giving parts to people that want to do it at home or making it even simple for shops. Instead of sitting there machining a single mount, you can buy a whole kit and put the whole kit in the time that you would take to machine a single part, right? So, and that's what, there's a lot of good stuff going on that way. Cool. You know, in the parts industry, unfortunately, you can't go to Recaro and buy a Recaro seat. You have to go to someone with a lot of money that has bought all these brands, and he's a middle guy, and he's selling seats, right? And he's selling also everything else, like distributors, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to do that. That's good in a way, but if I have a technical question, who do I speak to?
That's hard.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, and I think there's a good balance. There are parts that you could sell. Look, if you can sell parts, there are parts that you could sell. No problem. Self-explanatory. But if you get into too many stuff and people want to customize their cars, your phone's going to ring nonstop, right? And that's a balance. Like people say, why don't you build the mounts for the modern engines in the 2002? I'm like, I could, but then I'm going to get a call. It's like, I'm trying to put the motor in. It doesn't fit. Okay.
Here's what to do next.
So I just, you know, here I am sitting and explaining, and the guy... overconfident, but not enough talent. You see what I'm saying? So stuff like that. It's the best. I'll tell you, automotive industry is the best therapy for anybody. Anybody. What do you want to wrap your car? You want to tint your car? You want to lower your car? You want to take the motor and put a monster motor in there? It's amazing. It's fun.
That's awesome.
And you can do it.
J.C. Whitney is back. The original auto parts catalog, a garage staple and cultural cornerstone for over 100 years, is now a magazine. Whether you're a newcomer or a longtime gearhead, J.C. Whitney instills confidence by delivering expertly curated auto parts and a gateway to engaging community experiences, entertainment, resources, and inspiration. Learn more about the new J.C. Whitney at jcwhitney.com.
So in terms of somebody getting started, you know, they want to get into tinkering in their car, making changes, that kind of stuff. Where's a good area where they could succeed? You know, it's not too high skill, but still feel like they did something significant to their car.
I would say the first, everybody wants to lower their car.
Yeah, that looks cool.
and YouTube, there's a lot of information specifically for your car. Mm. Watch the YouTube. Don't be afraid, right? And if you want to lower your car, you could do it yourself. You could do it at home. You need basic tools, right? And your show is always helping people. Hey, this is the basic tools that you want. Hey, this is what you can get, right? So get your basic tools. And learn how to do it, not because you want to save money, because there's so much joy doing something on your car and seeing the end result. And now sometimes the end result is going to be terrible. Disaster.
That's part of the experience.
You can fix it. It's not that bad. So wheels, suspension, those are good places to start, right? Even maintenance, right? Even basic maintenance. Read up about it, YouTube. And do it by hand, you know. And if you forget, rewind, play, you know, and try it again. Do it again. So, steering wheel replacements, shift knobs, pedals, those are fun things to do, you know. And you could do it yourself, you know. So
that's awesome. So really, just if you want to learn, just start doing, and don't worry about breaking some stuff because that's part of the process. Yep. That's awesome. So for people moving forward, you know, I know, well, actually one more question about the builds that you do. So you built a crazy car. Does that person then come back to you all the time, or how do you do maintenance on something that's super custom?
Yeah. The ones that don't know how to work on their cars, we're married.
Okay.
We're married and they understand that. They understand that sometimes they'll hit something and they'll come back and, but the trick of the way I build cars, and I tell this, like, if you want a super simple car, fast car, leave the drivetrain to one type of a chassis, right? So let's talk about the BMW 2002s. Let's say you have a 1974 BMW 2002 and you come to me, Mark, and say, hey, make this a little bit more modern. I don't want to smell the, you know, carbon monoxide. And I want it to be smooth. I want it to start. I don't want carbureted. I don't want to smell like gas by the time I go somewhere, right? What do you do? And I'll tell you, okay, Mark, this is the best thing we could do. Your drivetrain is going to be from 1991 BMW 325. Radiator, back. So if you're stuck somewhere and you need spark plug wires, you go to AutoZone and you say, I have a 1991 BMW 325i and I need plugs, wires, cap, and rotor, let's say, right? They'll hand it to you, put it on. When it comes to the body, it's all 1974 BMW 2002. So that's how I perfected it, where it's simple. Hmm. The brakes are this, the drivetrain's this, the chassis this. And you never have to come to me because I ship a lot of cars out of state too.
Oh, wow.
So you don't have to come to me. Now, the special hot rods were married.
Yeah.
A big power, just fabricated pieces. Sorry. I build it. I have to maintain it. And, of course, I stand behind it. It's not like every time you come in, hi, $2,000, right?
Oh,
It's a lot of stuff that are just maintenance stuff and
So what happened? I mean, is it them driving it too hard, or is that just kind of the nature of custom where it's
sitting too long?
The
biggest problems that I have is sitting too long, and I mean too long.
Like what's
Remember,
too
long? Remember, this is a hobby car. I have guys that have not started their car for a year. Fuel stinks inside, and all that other stuff. Hey, the car starts, but it just runs horrible. No problem, bring it in, clean it up. Sitting too long. Driving, usually I hit something.
Oh, okay.
And it's always to the capability of the motor, tune it down and give it to them at 60%.
Oh, okay.
If you want 600 horsepower, the motor's 1,000 horsepower motor.
Okay.
Give it to them and that's it. A lot of misshifts, and you see it like, run, he's at 50s on it. he's going to go to 6 sometime. Like, we have 6-speed transmission. This is 6. It goes down to, fourth gear. Like, wham.
Done.
It's like,
so, all out of the bottom.
Yeah. Things like that. But other than that, if you keep it simple, an old car, if you want to build an old car, keep the drivetrain where you can go to a parts store and pick up parts, or online pick up parts. I keep saying go to a parts store. Everything is online these days. It's easier, right?
Just it's better online.
It is. It just comes to you, right? So do that. Don't fabricate too many parts.
Yeah.
Because then it's just one-offs, and just doesn't work well.
No, I can see that. Well, it's nice to know that it's like if you do a crazy build, like have a good relationship with the mechanic.
That's right. Yeah, don't upset your car builder.
No, that's a great point. And, I think it's kind of like because I do a lot of, programming type stuff. And with programs, you have one guy that'll do something a certain way. A lot of times, if you don't go back to that person, like you're going to have to remake some of the stuff because nobody's going to figure it out or be willing to. Now, have you done that before where somebody takes you, brings you like a super modded car and then you are able to fix it or improve it?
Okay. Yeah. And again, in our world, everybody thinks their way is a perfect way.
The best way.
So I have a Datsun 510. They've put a V6 motor in it, older car. Belongs to a dentist. I don't know what it is. I have a lot of dentist customers.
Dentists, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if my teeth are clean or not. But I can get them clean, no problem. And the car's been sitting for 5 years, and they got it running. It doesn't run right. Comes to me, of course. The first thing I do, I look at this car. This is not how I will build it.
Okay.
Now he's stuck because I don't know. I mean, color codes, they ran their own wires. I mean, I don't know what purple and blue is, right? BMW, we have a color code world, right? Mm. Datsun, we have color code. If you don't use those color codes, like BMW from 1967 all the way, let's say, to the newer ones, very simple. You get a purple and yellow wire that goes to the fuel pump.
Easy peasy.
Code is there. The wire code is there, let's say. So,
unless you're in a hurry and you don't care.
Yeah, just pulling wires. So that car came to me and said, sorry, I'm ripping everything, throwing it away. I'm starting with a basic universal wiring that somebody else can figure out after you leave here.
I love
so
that.
Those are,
Oh, that's a good question to ask if you are going to have a car built. Like, hey, are you going to, you know, what's your procedure? Or what's a good way to ask that if you're kind of vetting a new mechanic for a build? Should you say, like, how do you structure this? Or do you have a plan? Or
And the question would be, what happens if I take this car and move to Texas? Who can figure out what this car is? And that's very, if you're building cars, like one of the most important thing is you need to make sure that you're not using off-brand, one-off parts because you're stuck. Yeah. If they don't make that stuff, you're stuck. You want to use a standard factory off-the-shelf parts as possible, right? And this 2002, if I hit a rock on the freeway and the radiator just busted, I can go to AutoZone and tell them, I have a 325, I need a radiator. They'll have it, they'll hand there it to me, and I'll put it back in. You know, and that's the key. The key is don't do one-offs because then someone else is stuck with it later on. And a customer should always ask, it's like, this is the car I want. How are you going to build it? And what happens if I take this car and move out of state?
Oh, that's easy.
Do I ship the car back to you? That's a lot of money.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you just never do it. You'll end up selling it for a fraction of what you paid for it. Yep.
And nobody can figure it out. It becomes a headache, nightmare. Always. And I always done it that way. And I think over the years, it's just I have cars in Canada, this, that, and I tell them 325 drivetrain, turbo motor, CP pistons or whatever, GE, whatever pistons, turbo motor, you can find all the stuff off the shelf. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's a fantastic tip because I think that, you know, just personally, that would be my main concern where it's like, I don't drive it that much. Like, where am I going to fix it if something breaks? I'm not going to know how to fix it. What do I do? So that's a really easy approach to make that happen. Now, what percentage of mechanics or builders like you do you think do that?
I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you, I've fixed a lot of mistakes. I've gotten Datsuns in, Fiats in, Lotus Cortinas in. You have to follow what the factory did in order for it to be easy to maintain and build from that point on. So I don't know how many people do. I see a lot of modern engines, and I don't know how they connected to the chassis and how they built things, right? So I've corrected a lot of mistakes, and there are cars that I don't know anything about. Like, you work with old British cars. I mean, Lucas wiring. Wow.
Yeah.
And BMW did something funny too in the 60s in their 3.0 CSIs, right? The whole wiring harness was white wires with numbers on them.
Oh, God.
And that was a nightmare. And I don't know why they did that, right? So stick to the color code, stick to what is standard. It'd be great. And I see a lot of people, well, it's cheap for me just to go buy wires and rewire this car. But yeah, you can get the car running, but what is the customer going to do afterwards?
Yeah, what happens afterwards?
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
No, well, and I like having, you know, just the relationship aspect with your mechanic because it is the person who's going to be, keeping you alive because if the build's not good or if the, you know, anything's not hooked up properly, like it's a danger on top of, you know, expensive and annoying. Exactly.
And we're not, we're car builders, hot rodders, we don't have a program like a mechanic would that punches in, where's the airflow meter, you know, or where's this sensor that guides you. These are custom one-off built cars. Mm. So you need to make sure that it follows a certain system that any car builder, fabricator, builder, hot rodder will look at it and say, okay, that's simple.
It's good.
I understand it. So
awesome. Well, I love what you do. I think you have a great kind of mindset and philosophy behind building. And I really think that, you know, because of people like you, we could maybe save the profession if we tell enough people that, hey, this is how you can build. You could use your hands. You could be creative and do things that aren't, you know, perfectly put in place by CAD or 3D software or whatever it is. And it's a profession that's in demand. Yep. And I think it will be for at least the next, you know, 20 years until
absolutely
all of them are torn apart. But at that point, we'll just 3D print frames of cars,
3D print a whole car.
A whole car.
Right? And what happens to the people, right?
Well, somebody still has to put it together.
I think one of the greatest joys for me is building cars and seeing the finished product. But at the same time, apprentice, getting young people that they think they're just dumb and And no matter what they do, they won't be successful. And you breed a little bit of faith in them that, hey, you're not a cosmic accident, man. God created you so yes. unique. Look around you. No one looks like you. No one has your thumbprint. There's got to be something special. Don't listen to the world. Let me show you some of the things that I've done. See if you can grab. And their lives change.
Oh, yeah.
So changing cars and changing people's lives has been the greatest, I think, wealth in my life. And I love doing it. I'm going to do it till I'm... I think I'll, drop, hit my chin to a fender, and DN.
That's how you want to go. No, fiery car accident.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank
I think
you,
it's, we're going to be featuring your car on the website and also at jcwhitney.com. And anytime you want to come by, we're open. I know we have tons of subjects we didn't even cover, like the parts industry, but we'll do that on the next one.
PRI. That's something to talk about. Definitely. I love that show.
Well, where can people learn more about you in the meantime?
The best way, I think, will be Instagram Monofied Cars.
Okay.
So my name is Mono, and I modify cars. It's a nickname that everybody's bagging on me. He's like, oh, he always modifies cars. So Monofied Cars, and Instagram. And if they have any questions, they can hit me up.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Tune in next time for more talk about cars like this and the industry, parts, all that kind of stuff is coming up soon.